Macmillan Audio presents The Last Blood Carver, written by Vanessa Lay, read by Vivi Nguyen. For my mother, my father, and my Bengwai, may I make you proud. 1. Someone like Nika, with her fidgety smile and frayed satchel of snake oils, didn't belong in these streets. In the dog burrow near the harbor, she never would have stood out in this attire, with her cropped sleeves and bare hands. There, residents traded silk for cotton and wool, and the cogwork of their automatons crackled with rust and crusted sea salt. Here in the horse burrow, women wrapped themselves in tight silk dresses and men in boxy robes, concealing every inch of skin with long gloves and high collars. It was the fashion, stemming from the fear of people like her. The myth of them, anyway. People watched as she slipped by, this little soot stain in a city of silvers and blues. Eyes didn't linger. They gave her as much space as she wanted. Paper vendor automatons raised newspapers on segmented arms as she passed, so clean that her warped reflection greeted her in bronze. Today's headline was about the death of Kongmi Industries' founder. All the buzz in Thiumas, despite being week old news. This tabloid had made a grasp at relevance by adding a bite of scandal to the headline. Accident or assassination? Nika checked the slip of paper in her hand again, nervous about getting lost. In a planned city-state like Thiumas, she shouldn't have worried. Every road had been numbered, the cross streets alphabetized, but she would look a sorry scrap of rags and tinctures if she showed up at the wrong door. In the horse burrow, the city was flatter, spread out, not so layered, no box-like homes stacked atop one another. Every building demanded its own space. Tall and painted, the awnings curved in the style of pagodas. It wasn't hard to find her client's home, one of many townhouses, so even and identical, differentiated only by the wrought iron number nailed above the door. They were a simple kind of elegance, with a tiled roof and multiple stories and a balcony at the very top. With a breath, she approached the door and knocked. There was no immediate response. Nika looked both ways up and down the street, feeling exposed on the doorstep. So she waited, as folks around here did, crossing her arms and tapping her foot and trying to look like maybe, with a shower and a haircut and a complete change of clothes, she might have belonged. At last, the door opened. Just a crack, caught on chain locks. Through it, half a man peered at her, eye narrowed. He knew who she was from a glance and ushered her in hastily, undoubtedly wanting her off his doorstep just as much as she did. "We have a back entrance," he muttered. His voice dripped with disdain. Nika had a great many retorts to use against him, but a sharp tongue had never made her any chem. No. She had other talents for that. "My apologies," she said, brushing past him. If he noticed her sarcasm, he didn't acknowledge it. They didn't exchange names. Their interaction would not require them. His home was smaller on the inside than it looked, the furniture made of dark, lacquered wood and inlaid with nacre. She caught sight of a wall-mounted rotary dial, too. Few were rich enough to afford their own home telephones. As she observed the twin place settings, the double armchairs, the two pairs of shoes by the door, she understood why the house was so small, despite the man's obvious wealth. She understood why he was desperate enough to hire someone like her. It was a home meant only for two, and one must have been on their deathbed. "Where's the patient?" she asked, holding her bag of tinctures close as though she were a home doctor. "Upstairs," the man said, squeezing the thin scraggle of hair on his chin. Follow me. Nika trailed the man to the stairs, glass clinking in her bag. Now, I'll have you know, I don't believe in this homeopathic nonsense, he insisted as they climbed, each hardwood step creaking underfoot. Whatever you use, your salves and whatnot, I want to know the scientific premise. She'd heard this disclaimer in some variation from all her clients. Nika couldn't blame them. Coming from a technocratic city like Theumas, of course he had to renounce homeopathy for that shiny, modern medicine. But, with a contemptuous smile, she understood that somewhere, deep inside, he did believe. He wouldn't have sought her out otherwise. Or perhaps the physicians had already written off this patient as a lost cause, and he was desperate enough to hope that ginger and ginseng could do a damn thing against death. But of course they couldn't. That was Nika's secret. Well, one of many. She didn't believe in this homeopathic nonsense either. They came to a bedroom on the uppermost level, its curtains flung open to look out onto the balcony. A woman slept alone on the wide bed, wrapped beneath the heavy comforter. She looked almost like an automaton in the making, with a skeletal frame and catheters hanging out of her. A large box-like machine sat at the opposite side of her bed, slowly eating its command roll as its cogs worked, dripping fluids and medicine through her lines. The heavy breathing of its bellows filled the room. Nika approached the bed, and the man sucked in a breath through his teeth, as though about to change his mind and usher her out the door. Perhaps he just now noticed her Yarongi's features, her golden brown skin, dark irises, and hair the color of coffee rather than ink. Growing up in Theumas had wrung some of the island influence out of her, but that didn't deter clients from their paranoia. Nika glanced back at him, awaiting a verdict, and he held open a palm to let her approach. She took a spot at the bedside to inspect the woman. The patient held a placid expression, her eyes closed, and Nika might have thought she was napping, if not for the mottled look of her skin. Even for a Theuman, she was unusually pale. This position was eerily familiar, a memory pulled from years ago. Her at the bedside, while her mother lay beneath a thin sheet. Only, there weren't so many catheters and machines, just Nika's hand in hers. And her mother had never looked so sallow, not even in death. She blinked out of her thoughts. What's happened here?
It began as chest pain, and one day she collapsed. Since then, she hasn't been the same. Weak, in pain. She's asleep now from all her medicine, but the doctors say it's only to make her comfortable, not cure her. They say there's no more hope, but...
His gaze swept over the woman, his expression forlorn.
I don't believe that. We had plans. It's not over.
Nika inched closer to the woman. And what do the doctors think it is?
A disease of the blood, probably from her mother's side. But her mother was never like this.
The man straightened his robe, clearing his throat with the air of a scholar.
If I had to guess, I would say it's those invisible microbes, some form of onslaught on her heart. We just gotten back from a trip out of the city. Perhaps she contracted something there.
He said this haughtily, and Nika realized he didn't know a true lick of microbe theory. He was just repeating words he'd seen in the papers, or perhaps from the physicians. She could say whatever she wanted, and he'd probably believe her. Nika rolled her neck. This would be easy. I'll be doing my own exam now, she said.
No gloves? He asked,
the curl of his lip betraying his suspicion. He wouldn't have asked that question if she were Theuman, but a touch from a Yarongese like her had become a dangerous thing among the superstitious. I can't feel a pulse through leather, and, as you might have noticed, I'm hardly in a position to afford silk, she said. Nika bit back the bitterness. He was not the first to question her bare hands. With a hesitant nod, he permitted her to work, and she feigned a brief physical exam.
Then she extended a hand toward the woman's neck, slowly, to show she meant no harm. With two fingers in the cradle of the jawline, it looked like she was taking a pulse. And she was, but it was so much more than that. With the interface of skin against skin at her fingertips, the limitlessness of her awareness exploded forth, racing first across the woman's vascular system, every vein and venule branching and collapsing in waterways across the woman's body, and then her nervous system, snapping from synapse to synapse as electrical impulses did. Nika layered herself into the woman's skeleton, wove herself into the vibrant workings of bone and marrow, and then the muscular system, her consciousness picking through corded tissue and wrapped sinew. Nika felt the ghost of the woman's pain mirrored in her own chest, bursting against the ribcage. The pain expanded with her empathy, and she quelled them both, but not before she learned the source of the injury. There was a mass of damaged tissue staining the woman's heart, starved of blood. Nika gleaned all this in a matter of seconds, less than it required to take a pulse. When she drew her hand away, she knew every ailment this woman had, could see the history of this woman's body etched in the unfurled tapestry of her anatomy. But she didn't reveal any of that, because then even an idiot such as her client could put two and two together. Even an idiot could realize what Nika truly was, something far worse than a sham healer. Instead, she opened her pouch of tinctures, all just a couple drops of aromatic oil and water, placebos. For the pain, I suggest some licorice extract, either taken in tea or directly as drops. As for the microbes, I would suggest... What did she have in excess at the moment? Eucalyptus, applied topically on the chest for a week. He nodded, and then seemed to remember he was a more discerning gentleman.
What does it all do?
The licorice has a certain structure of carbon rings that synapse with pain receptors to alleviate them, she said, waving a hand as if the details bored her. Now she was talking out of her ass too, drawing from words she'd seen in stolen textbooks. And the eucalyptus, well, it has natural antimicrobial properties. With my titer, it's stronger than fermicillin.
Stronger than fermicillin? He repeated,
and suspicion snuck into his voice. Had she pushed his ignorance too far? Fermicillin is made from mold, you see, so there's lots of processing to make sure it's safe for human consumption. It's diluted, so to speak. But eucalyptus oil is all natural, so no need to dilute its antimicrobial properties. She gave him an innocuous smile, ready with the lie. It's a secret the drug manufacturers would kill me for divulging. That seemed to satisfy the man, and he nodded again, as though she had made any sense at all.
How much do I owe you?
She pinched her chin, trying to discern how much she could swindle from him. While he seemed desperate, an exorbitant price might only deepen his doubt. So, maybe something middling, just to get her to her next rent. I want to see your wife make a full recovery, so I'm willing to lower the price for such a critical case. Nika looked back over the woman, corpse-like in her bed. She could heal her, truly, if she wanted. For a moment, she had almost considered it. But her stomach flipped with hunger, and she remembered that she couldn't spare the energy. 50 chem for the eucalyptus regimen, and I'll lower it to 20 for the licorice, she decided. Nika watched his expression, half expecting him to accuse her of conning him for chem. But his eyes held only resolution as he traipsed to the bedside, taking the woman's hands into his.
Honya, love, I found something that might help. It's not over.
His frostiness had left him, replaced only by tenderness, lips in a half smile, and eyes soft. Nika almost expected his love alone to melt the paleness from the woman's lips, to return the rosiness to her skin. She looked away, biting the inside of her cheek. When her eyes landed on the nightside table, she found the woman's doctor's note, a misdiagnosis of hematic disease alongside a question. Would you like to donate the body of your loved one toward the Santo Research Initiative? The man had marked No. As she watched the man and his wife, sympathy wheedled its way into her chest, but she dug her nails into her palms to silence it. Nika, no. Don't fall for that. But the man clearly had no one else. Neither do you, and you haven't the energy for this. He'd pay her enough for a big dinner. And if you get caught? She'd healed blocked vessels elsewhere in the body before. She knew she could do it. You're going to heal her, aren't you? Curse your wretched little heart. Nika placed a hand on the bedside, calling the man's attention. If you would, there is just one final physical examination I'd like to conduct, just to make sure I'm not missing anything. He blinked, the words slow to catch. When they did, he stammered. Of course. For the patient's modesty, may I have the room? I'm her husband, he tutted. Well, then, to preserve the secrets of my trade. She flashed him a tight-lipped smile. He seemed to weigh it, but only for a moment, before relenting. She walked him out of the room, closed the door behind him, and drew the curtains over the windows. Once concealed from snooping eyes, she settled at the bedside, turning her gaze to the woman. I pity you, poor thing, having to be wed to a fool who loves you. Then, eyes closed, she took the woman's hand. They connected, and she was once again privy to all the layers of her anatomy. Wading through the nausea of the woman's medications, Nika teased her influence toward the heart, where she tasted the acridness of dying tissue. There, she found the offending ailment, a narrowed vessel, obstructed by a clot. This, she could work with. When she was young, her grandmother had taught her on fat deposits and scabs. Then, her father had formed a blockage like this deep in his leg. Now, Nika stretched her control first to the vasculature, where she wrapped her influence around the clot. All she had to do was force the clot to degrade. After her grandmother's tutelage, it was second nature. However, she didn't burn the woman's energy stores. Her patient would need those to recuperate. Instead, Nika burned her own, feeling the core of her abdomen heat. The fire carved a path up her chest and through her arm, warming the place where skin touched skin. She felt a surge of power as her energy, raw and healthy, flooded into the patient's bloodstream. It took a moment to reach the side of the heart, but as it did, her influence strengthened, a fist tightened around the clot. Nika leveraged that influence, willing the clot to shrink, cells bursting, fats shriveling, proteins dissolving. It followed her command as surely as a trained muscle, the blockage withering to rot as her own energy burned. Next, she flitted to the damaged tissue of the heart, finding it warped compared to the rest of the anatomy. It stood out like a wrong note in a smooth melody, discordant every time her influence passed by. She didn't salvage what had already died, but the muscle clung to its livelihood, and she bolstered it, scaffolding the structure of the heart chamber, reinvigorating it with electricity. At last, Nika pulled away, not daring to expend any more of her own energy. But she'd done enough for the woman to recover. She drew a deep breath to regain her grounding in the world around her, her senses slow to return as they trickled through a wall of nausea. The silk sheets came first, crisp underneath her, and then the firmness of her feet against the floor. Her chest deflated with fatigue, and she felt the knot of hunger in her stomach expand, reaching her skull as a headache. She smoothed the hair out of her face, her palm coming away with a sheen of sweat from the effort. Your husband owes me a great deal, she huffed, mostly to herself. Through her fatigue, Nika smiled. It had been a while since she'd healed another. This was what her ability had been meant to do, after all. It was not, however, meant to be used in secret, hidden away behind placebo oils and false examinations. She stood shakily, drawing out tinctures of licorice and eucalyptus and leaving them at the bedside table. As she turned to leave, The woman gave her first indication of life, a noise in the back of her throat as she flinched. Nika felt a bite of jealousy. That this illness had been so simple to heal, where her mother's had not. She went for the door, but when she turned the handle, the man was already there, opening it from the other side. They blinked dumbly at each other for a moment, and Nika narrowed her eyes, wondering how much he'd witnessed. He only stepped past her and into the room.
"How is she?" he asked.
"Seems like you were correct about the microbes. The tinctures I left on the table should work. I'll leave a card with instructions for their use.
And how much do I owe?"
70 chem, she said, as she watched him draw out his wallet. Her eyes narrowed. Gloves. He wore gloves. Did he have those on before? No. She'd seen him hold his wife's hand without them. And now that she scanned him over a second time, she noticed how his collar had been tightened around his neck and how he'd put shoes on, even though they were indoors. He handed her the chem, and she snatched it a little too quickly. Nika backed toward the door, but he held out a gloved hand to pause her.
"Won't you teach me how to use the tonics?" he asked.
He was stalling. Had he called the constabulary? Did he suspect what she was? No, of course not. For people like him, her kind didn't exist anymore. He would be calling the constabulary on a myth. But then again, he had been superstitious enough to hire a Yarb doctor. "You'll find it intuitive," she said, inching toward the door. He stepped forward. Would he grab her? When she reached for the handle, he drew a kitchen knife from the folds of his robe. His arms shook, his grip poor. Nika scowled, her fingers flexed in anticipation beneath her sleeve.
"What's this?"
she asked, forcing disinterest. Underneath it, she hid the quiver of her hand, knowing she might have to use her gift in a way her grandmother had never approved of.
"What did you do?"
"I'm not sure what you mean."
"You're one of them, aren't you?"
he demanded, the trembling of his jaw betraying his fear. Ah, yes, fear. The form his gratitude took after she'd saved his wife from a sure death. Nika remembered now why she'd stopped bothering with the others, why she'd left them with only placebos and tea oil. Wretched little heart indeed. "You'll have to be more specific," she seethed, drawing backward. "Do you mean Yarongese?" "Yes, my family is from the island. A sham? Certainly not. You'll find my methods tried and true. Before you hurt yourself, sir, I'd advise you to put down the knife." That last part was more for her sake. She didn't want to sour her act of healing with an act of violence, though she wouldn't hesitate to defend herself if it came to that.
"No," he said, jabbing the knife through the air. "I know what you are. Blood carver."
"Blood carver?" She scowled at the word. "There's no such thing." Nika was giving him a final out. A smarter man would have known that blood carvers didn't exist anymore, that they were a breed that fell with the island. But the man's ignorance was wide enough to come full circle, and he was somehow, miraculously, correct.
"I saw it, what you did to her," he insisted, jerking the knife.
"Well then, no point in keeping up the charade now." She eyed the knife testily, but his stance and grip were noncommittal. He'd probably never wielded a weapon in his life. "I've been called many things," she said, stepping forward. He stumbled backward. "Witch? Liver eater? Necromancer?" His knife arm shook, and he held the small hilt with both hands, as if her look alone could fling it from his grasp. She glared at him, anger rising as a scowl. "But that might be the most accurate one. Blood carver." Now, she relished in the fear, because if he could not show his thanks, what else could he offer her but fear? Nika fainted forward, scaring him with a shout, and he fell backward. Taking the opportunity, she threw herself at him, hand clawing for his neck. When they touched, she inlaid herself within his anatomy, his body secondary to her own. For a moment, She considered killing him instantly, burning all his fuel stores, or stopping the impulse of his heart. Maybe something poetic, sadistic, a blockage in the vessel just like the one she'd taken from his wife.
"What did you do to her?"
he asked, voice hollow, and she hesitated. In his last moments, her hand around his neck, he was still thinking about her. His knife slacked in his hand, but not from her control. It must have been acceptance, then, that she would kill him. Yet the deep sadness in his eyes was not for himself. She could not source something as ephemeral as love with her gift. But now it poured from him like blood from an open wound, torrential and infectious. For a moment, she almost wondered what that must feel like, a love that weathered the threat of death. Through the redness of her rage, she saw his longing, and it stopped her from carving death into him. With a visceral growl, she ripped the knife from his hand, drawing blood as the blade caught her palm. "I healed her," she spat. "You idiot!" A muffled pounding on the door downstairs drew her attention, and she pushed herself off the man. Another second, and she heard the front door slam open, followed by the sounds of footsteps and shoved furniture. Nika raced to the windows. With a grunt, she yanked down the curtains, pulling the rod from the ceiling. It crashed into the medical machine, denting the box's iron shell, but the woman wouldn't need that anymore. She threw a glance over her shoulder, finding the man trembling at the door, fingers massaging his neck. He didn't come for her. Nika kicked the door open and dragged the curtains to the balcony. They were heavier than she'd expected, heavier still from the fatigue that tugged at her muscles, but she hefted the weight over her shoulder as it trailed broken glass. With a heave, she tossed the bulk of the curtains over the railing, then tied the end to the baluster. Across the street, curtains parted behind windows, and she caught glimpses of the curious eyes that watched her behind locked shutters. Nika positioned herself onto the curtain, just as the constabulary burst through the door. Only, it wasn't the constabulary. No blue uniform, no silver trim, no service cap, no badges. Just bolas, wooden catchpoles, and gold-toothed smiles. Her client had called in the butchers. 2. Nika scaled down the townhouse's facade, easing the silk curtain through her fingers. Her cut palm smeared blood on the fabric, red leaching into gold. This shouldn't have been so difficult, but her muscles shook with fatigue from healing that woman. Never again. But that's what she'd said the last time. She hit the ground, feeling the rough landing and the rattle of her ankles. The butchers didn't follow her from the balcony, but from inside the house, she heard the crash of furniture and the clomp of boots on stairs. They'd be out soon. She turned down the street and ran. The butchers burst from the door like rats from a flooded gutter, finding her quickly against the pale limestone motif of the city. She flew into an alley, pushing past trash-collecting automatons and anyone who blocked her path. Aristocrats huffed with indignation as she shoved through them, but their complaints fell to shock when they saw the butchers tearing after her. She'd heard ghost stories about the butchers, black market boogeymen who dealt in rare goods, and what was rarer than a blood carver? For aristocrats, butchers were a way to get children to eat their vegetables. For the Yarangis, who the butchers labeled and sold as blood carvers, the name butcher was never more apt. Her cut palm throbbed as she sprinted through the alleyways. She quelled those pain receptors. She'd heal the cut later when she had the time and energy to expend. But now, a heavy muddiness dragged at her spent muscles as she clambered through narrow streets and hurtled into private lawns. They bulled after her, uncaring of the mess they made of gardens and service automatons. Her feet took her south, toward the parts of the city where she'd blend in, the tight roads of the dog burrow, or the bustling fora of the pig. Throwing glances over her shoulder, she let her instinct guide her through familiar passageways and sharp turns. Nika followed the slope of the hill, dropping down onto tiled roofs where the neighborhood terraced itself on the incline. Soon, she'd left the suburbs of her client's house for the thicket of downtown, a girl adrift in a sea of peaked roofs and busy roads. Thumas was a landscape of dark blue facades, silk-black rooftops, and silver accents. Against it all, she and her brown garb looked painfully misplaced. The butchers were close behind, albeit clumsy on the roofs. Nika caught sight of a trolley at the bottom of the street, and hope flared in her chest. If she could make it, the butchers wouldn't be able to drag her off without calling the attention of law enforcement. She slid off the rooftops and dropped down to the streets below. The distant clatter above her reminded her the butchers were still in fervent pursuit, but all she had to do was reach the trolley and... As she rounded the corner, Nika collided into someone in a flurry of paper. She stumbled to regain her balance, annoyance rising in her chest as she sized up the young man she'd crashed into. He was clearly a boy who belonged in this part of the city, well-fitted vest suit peeking out underneath the folds of his robe, shoes shined to a mirror finish, and black hair combed to frame a handsome face. "Watch it!" he chided, his indignant expression mirroring her own as he collected his scattered papers and file folders. But his irritation melted away to surprise as he swept his eyes over her, her torn shirt, baggy pants, bare hands, golden brown skin, scattered freckles, dark eyes. He was her opposite in many ways, features sharp, where hers were soft. From down the alley, litter clattered with a butcher's distant approach. The young man must have noticed it too, because he grabbed her wrist to help her up. Only then did she realize that his hands were bare, and that he touched her without hesitation, skin on skin. She met his eyes, waiting for him to realize she was Yarongi's, but the disgust never came. "Are you all right?" he asked instead, drawing her onto the safety of the sidewalk. Few had ever asked her that question in earnest, so she struggled to find her answer. Before she could, he threw a glance down the alleyway just as the butchers rounded the corner. His eyes flared with concern. "Are those?" Nika didn't let him finish his question before she fled. When she turned at the bottom of the street, she found the trolley already pulling away, and panic thrummed in her throat as she heard the thunder of butchers behind her. Cursing the mother, she dipped into the first alleyway she saw, stealing one last glance at the young man she'd crashed into. As the butchers emerged onto the street, he spilled those papers again, delaying them as they attempted to round him. "My bad," he said, kneeling to regather them. The butchers scowled as they swerved around him, one of them tripping over an extended leg. And then they spotted her. As they trampled across the young man's papers, Nika dipped away into the alley. She barreled down the narrowing street, following it as it angled, before staggering to a halt when the alley ended at an unyielding brick wall. Heart pounding, Nika turned, only to see the butchers blocking the other end. Frantically, she searched for an exit, finding one in a low fire escape ladder. With a running start, Nika scaled the wall, fingers catching the bottommost rung and feet scrabbling against brick as she pulled herself up. She'd made it a few rungs up before the butchers reached her, the tallest of the crew craning up to snag her shoe. With a twist of her ankle, she kicked him off, losing her slipper in the process. Her bare foot slipped against the cold metal rungs, slick with blood from her still bleeding palm, but she hauled herself higher and higher until a loop of wire caught her ankle, and she felt a tug against her leg. She slipped as another catch pole snagged her other foot. Her fingers burned with the tightness of their grip as the butchers yanked, until at last she lost her hold on the rungs, nails clawing metal, palm smearing blood. Alarm spiked in her chest as she fell. Somewhere along her descent, her body slammed against the edge of a railing, but she couldn't reorient herself before she tumbled down onto the pavement. Something cracked in her ribs, and she turned off the pain receptors as soon as the burning came. Her first thought was not of any broken bones, but of something far more valuable. Her hand went to her sternum, feeling for the ring she wore around her neck on a string. For a moment, she panicked, thinking it lost or broken, until she felt the coolness of it against her skin. Only then did she remember escape. Tasting blood, Nika pulled herself forward. Her body was breaking down, but she'd heal it later. With what energy? That was also a problem for later. With blood-caked fingernails, she yanked at the cords wrapping her ankles. Nika silenced the pain receptors as they twinged to life, opened her airway as it filled with fluid, set the broken bones of her ribs, until she was doing too much at once, her attention so spread across her body and the catchpoles and the rooftops that it thinned to smoke. The butchers leaned over her, figures blotting out the sky. She crawled away with the pitifulness of an ant plucked clean of its legs, but one grabbed her by the hair to tilt her head back. She heard the grind of broken bones that she didn't feel, another problem for later. Nika flailed against them, trying to catch skin, but finding only thick gloves and long sleeves.
"Is it a real one?" one of them asked, and the man who'd grabbed her shook her hard. "Course not, but she sure looks the part, huh? Probably full Yarungis," another said. He tapped her with his boot. Though they didn't believe she was a blood carver, their superstition was evident in their layered garb. Their only mistake was in not concealing their faces. Nika darted out a hand, grabbing a butcher by the face. They touched for only a moment before he reeled away. But it was enough. He staggered backward, coughing and gagging, with a bloodied nose and bloodshot eyes. He clutched his face and stared at her, eyes bulging. She'd burst every blood vessel in the man's body she'd managed to grab.
"Shit, she's real!"
he choked as a bruise bloomed in the shape of her handprint. Nika took the opportunity to squirm away, but the plan was ill-conceived. Another butcher grabbed her with ease, pinning her arms behind her back with gloved hands.
"And to think, I almost sat out on this call," said the man who'd grabbed her.
He pulled out a length of cloth to bind her hands, winding until it burned. The pain receptors were turning back on, one by one. She'd expended too much energy. Nika smelled blood with each breath as every ounce of pain returned, slowly at first, and then, all at once, until her vision pulsed. Her heartbeat pounded in her ears, and she felt her consciousness ebb, though she clung to it with gritted teeth. The butcher's dialogue muffled to a drone as she turned her attention inward, dousing fires across her anatomy. Already, she felt herself succumbing to the pain. The edges of her vision darkened, breaths growing short. Through the foggy ringing in her ears, she managed to discern the butcher's words.
"Would you look at that? A real live blood carver. How many of these do you reckon are even left?"
Then the tenuous cord of her consciousness snapped. Nika blinked out of her heart-soothing stupor, slow to recall her surroundings. A warmly lit room, the windows flung open to let in fresh air, and her mother's bed beside her. It had been her mother to pull away, disconnecting Nika's heart-soothing with the loss of their touch. But Nika shook her head.
"I can do it," she said, grabbing her mother's hand again.
Her heart-soothing enmeshed itself within thin skin, sank into frail muscle. It felt the frayed spindle of nerves, atrophied on her mother's right side. When her influence climbed the spinal cord, it fought against a buzzing, itching feeling, something viral, like claws against Nika's own skin. Then, in her mother's skull, there was such a mess of her dura and brain tissue, but Nika had no idea where to begin. Was it the swelling? Perhaps. She could take some pressure off the nerves, give back the function of her mother's limbs. Or perhaps it was all this dead tissue. But Nika had no idea how to begin repairing it. Not when her grandmother had passed the year before. Not when she was barely a heart-soothe. Not when, again,
Her mother pulled her arm away.
Nika, dear, she said,
the words coming haggardly. She swallowed, but it looked painful.
I can heal you,
Nika insisted, blinking back tears. They weren't helpful. She was only 12, but she knew she had to be strong. She was the only one who could be. The two of them were all that was left of the family. Her mother blinked, tilted her head. That was all the motion she was capable of. Even now, muscles thin and face gaunt, she was beautiful. The sun loved skin, each freckle a kiss, and eyes a beautiful shade of black. Her cracked lips managed a smile.
You tried. It's okay.
Tears burned. Nika bit them back.
I've been reading Grandma's books. It must be a matter of dead nerve cells. If only I could heal them, then I...
No more, Nika, her mom said, and the sternness of her voice was enough to still Nika. Her limbs stirred beneath the sheets, each move a labor as she reached for something under her shirt. It was their family bone ring, the only thing to survive the fire that took Nika's grandmother. Even as her mother winced from the pain of removing it, Nika didn't help, because that bone ring meant the end. It meant there was nothing else to be done. Her mother extended it to her. Nika didn't take it. Now the tears were falling.
Please, don't leave me, she said.
What would she have left? Tears welled in her mother's eyes, too. Her gaze fell to the ring, every band of white bone against the black onyx, a promise of remembrance. Once it was her grandmother's, and once her great-grandmother's, and once her great-great-grandmother's, and now it was hers. Nika swallowed, stared, sat frozen at the bedside, because what was she to do? If she could not save her own mother, then what was the point of heart-soothing? With much effort, her mother swallowed, working up strength for her next words.
Just because I can't stay doesn't mean I'm leaving you.
Only then did Nika place her palm in her mother's and accept the ring. Consciousness returned to her in the form of monkey chatter and birdsong, and then the chill of a cold floor beneath her. Pain came last, itching its way back under her skin despite her attempts to silence it. Every leak she plugged only caused another to spout. Her cheek stung against the gritty concrete. With a groan, Nika collected herself to a sitting position, eyes adjusting to the dark. Now she saw where the chatter came from. She was in a menagerie, turtles and colorful birds and monkeys stacked in cages, some dead. And she, a blood carver, was just another caged animal sitting in the midst of it. It was a small warehouse, and yet the butchers had managed to stuff in as many black market commodities as they could. Ivory tusks spanning one table, and powdered something or other caked into squares on another. Still more merchandise lay behind stapled wooden crates labeled hazardous materials. So, this was the butcher's row. With a jolt, she remembered her ring. Nika fumbled through her layered clothing with shackled wrists, ribs and shoulders wailing at every movement, until she found it still tangled around her neck. The butchers must not have deemed it valuable enough to take, and truly, it wasn't. Not to anyone but her. It was made of bone and onyx, with a fracture down the center from the fire. No one else could read the inscription on the inner band. Three characters that formed her familial name. Swanya-san. No one else would find value in those insets of bone along the onyx, each fragment taken from a heart-soothe in her lineage. No one else would notice that the band was incomplete, with space yet meant for her grandmother, for her, for those who were supposed to come after. She tucked the ring back under her collar, then rose. Each breath came with a stabbing ache, but she knew her body intimately enough to understand what it was trying to tell her. Nika staggered forward, fingers catching the chicken wire mesh of her cage as she scanned for an escape. Now she'd really done it. She'd played into many Yarongi stereotypes when she learned most humans wouldn't see her any other way. The blood-hungry blood carver, the sea-loving immigrant, the hapless charity case. But now she'd fallen into a new one. A ware in the butcher's row. Another item to cross off the list. Nika felt no one could put her in a pigeonhole if she climbed in there herself, but this particular trope was deadlier than the rest. She tried not to think about how the butcher's row had commodified other blood carvers before her as exotic goods, and she didn't linger on the fate that awaited her if the wrong client purchased her. No, she was going to get the hell out of here. A monkey perked up at her movement, then moved to the corner of its cage to watch her, head cocked.
"Hey, little guy," she cooed, dragging herself toward him. "We're stuck in this together, aren't we?"
She extended a hand, three fingers pressed together as though she held a treat. It piqued his interest, and he reached out, tiny fingers scrabbling at hers. With newfound speed, she snatched his arm. From that touch, she flooded his anatomy with her own consciousness. She made it quick, shutting down his pain receptors before stopping his heart. That was easy to do with animals, much harder on humans. Humans could feel her influence, so their own anatomies fought her for control. Animals were never so lucky. The monkey collapsed, and from his still warm body, she siphoned all his energy stores before they could dissipate in death. With the newfound calories and nutrients, Nika restored some of her wounds. She released the calcium from his bones to deposit into her own, reappropriated the components of his lustrous hair to seal the splits in her skin. Tissue generation was always an expensive process, and she sucked the monkey dry of his energy, watching as his body stiffened and seized with rigor mortis. It was a kinder fate than what awaited him on the butcher's row, if the table of severed monkey paws was any indication. Some of her pain ebbed, the receptor satisfied with her soothing. Nika stood, giving the monkey a grateful look.
"Thank you. And, sorry about that."
His corpse twitched in understanding. Now, for her escape. She yanked at the chicken wire, but it had been fastened tightly. Then she jiggled the door, not surprised to find it locked. Nika frowned. In Yarongi's folklore, there were blood carvers who could give themselves superhuman abilities, a rhino strength by maximizing the chemistry of their musculature, or unbreakable bones by perfecting their calcium matrices. Of course, she knew only of the legends. Her parents had fled Yarong long before she'd been born, and those abilities, if ever they truly existed, had been left on the island. Nika didn't dare try those tricks now for fear of wrecking her own anatomy in the process. A stone of calcium deposited in the wrong place, a muscle grafted to the wrong bone. She'd need more than monkeys to fix all of that. While Yarongi's people with her gift had the ability to alter anatomy through touch and thought alone, it was as much a science as medicine, each procedure requiring practice and study, like any surgery might. But desperation was a powerful motivator. Before she could get desperate enough to experiment, the click of lights echoed around the warehouse, and the rafters came alive with incandescent bulbs. Nika's eyes adjusted again, blinking away the temporary blindness as the broad expanse of the warehouse came into full view. Creatures woke from slumber in the corners of the building, and she could see a metal door on one side, crowded with boxes, from which a group of people emerged. They meandered their way between pillars of crates toward her, admiring wares on the way. A crocodile here, some snakes there. Yes, yes, all fascinating. But Nika knew she was the true marvel.
"And here we have her," said a woman at the front of the group. Her clothing was a mere imitation of refinement, with wraps of colored rayon and scarves to conceal a too tight dress. Two of Nika's captors were in her attendance, followed by a stately gentleman she assumed was the client. He had the posture of an aristocrat, back straight and neck angled, as though he was accustomed to looking down on people. A fine black robe, embroidered with silver herons, draped his shoulders to reveal a well-tailored dress shirt underneath. He narrowed his eyes as he scrutinized her. Good. There was a doubt there, and his lips pursed with the haughtiness of a man with something to prove. He looked her up and down, seeming unimpressed by what she had to offer, before passing the butcher a trenchant look that held a silent question. Is she real?
She fell down the side of a building just this morning, noted one of her captors, as though by way of explanation. Now look at her. Back on her feet. She's healed herself.
Oh? Was I meant to act injured? Nika quipped. The client leaned forward, hands clasped behind his back and eyes narrowed.
I want proof before purchase. I'm not interested in consuming a regular human.
Proof?
The butchers looked uneasily between one another, but all Nika heard was that he was planning on eating her. Panic spiked, slipping through her control, and she staggered backward in the cage. She'd heard of the superstition, something about how eating the heart of a blood carver could grant immortality, or good health, or libido. It changed with each iteration. All false, of course, but that had never stopped the butcher's row. The woman cleared her throat.
Certainly, a knife, if you would, the man said, holding out a gloved hand.
What are you intending? The woman asked, eyes narrowed.
If she's a blood carver, she would heal a fatal wound, he said.
When they didn't give him a weapon, he scoffed and perused the tables, finding a knife near the animal cages still crusted in monkey blood. The butcher opened and closed her mouth with quiet protests, and at last she managed,
You would injure one of my wares?
Yeah, you would injure one of her wares? Nika echoed.
It would not be an injury if she's truly a blood carver, the client reasoned.
Isn't that right? Nika prayed the butchers would keep insisting, but they only exchanged nervous glances before the woman dipped her head in resignation. Nika threw up her hands.
Hold on a moment. Let's talk this through. You're a smart man. You caught the farce. I'll admit it. I'm a fake. No need to trouble yourself for proof, she babbled,
her eyes trailing from his knife to his face. His impassive expression told her that murder was little more than an inconvenience to him. Her gaze flicked to the monkey cages. Would she have enough energy to heal a fatal wound? And even if she did, her fate was determined. He'd buy her and chop her up for parts. Her bones would get powdered into tea and her liver eaten with shark fin soup, as though her gift of blood carving could survive beyond the grave. Nika swallowed. Perhaps, if she could feign death, bleed out in front of his eyes without dying, he'd pass her over. That'd give her more time for escape. But how? How? Her mind raced for ideas, recalling the old anatomy books she and her grandmother had stolen from medical colleges. How to die without dying? How to survive as a corpse? The jangle of the padlock rattled her back to the present focus. The client was unlocking the door, and she considered escape. But her legs and hands were chained. How far could she go? She searched the butcher's for a key ring.
Careful, Mr. Zen, sir, the woman cautioned, her expression pained. Not for Nika, but for her client.
One touch, and she has access to all your vital organs. It's a certain death.
I'm well aware, Mr. Zen said, but he opened the door anyway.
Nika bolted, but he grabbed her wrists with a gloved hand and drove the blade straight into her gut. The pain came before she could react. Nika doubled forward, then fell to the floor as he withdrew the blade. She gasped on the concrete as her blood pooled beneath her. Her mind reeled with panic, so many emotions lighting up her attention at once, all her body's alarms flaring, every muscle clenched against the threat of death. Too much to parse through. Overwhelming. So much blood. She was dying.
No. Her focus returned to her, sharp above the muddle of her pain. Breathe, Nika. Breathe. She would not survive all these years alone, only to die here, in the Butcher's Row. No, she'd make sure her death meant something. Pain receptors off. Her skin fizzled to silence. There. Now she had room to think. Next, she muted the buzz of adrenaline and stress hormones coursing through her. She'd take it manually from here. First, stop the bleeding. She'd lost too much already in her floundering, but now she pulled every last ounce of energy out of her stores to mend tissue, starting from the inside out. Organs first, to stop the internal hemorrhaging, and then the peritoneum, to hold her viscera in place. As for her skin, she let that weep a little, just for show. Convince him she wasn't a blood carver, give him nothing to bid for. She would not heal herself today, just to get eaten tomorrow. She'd have to fake shock. That wouldn't be hard. Her body was already preparing for it. But she shunted her remaining blood inward, constricting superficial vessels, until she was sure she looked as pale and colorless as a thumen. She felt the remainder of her fuel dwindling like a candle on its last inch of wick, and she bled it conservatively to feed her charade. The client clicked his tongue.
Just Yarongese. Figured as much.
No! One of her captors protested.
She's faking it. I can assure you. She'll have a pulse.
Oh, mother. If they checked her pulse, it'd be over. She couldn't risk shutting off her carotid, or else she'd truly be dead. Keys jangled again. Nika considered giving up her play and accepting her fate. Instead, she prepared to jump him, to suck him dry of his energy stores and escape the place. At the moment, with her body in torpor and her energy reserved, the very thought of moving sowed fatigue into her bones. But when he stooped beside her, he didn't check her neck. Instead, he took her hand. Nika resisted the smile. While she couldn't shut off blood to her brain, she didn't mind clamping off a radial artery. The client placed gloved fingers at the edge of her wrist, but she'd already constricted the vessel. His fingers pressed deeper, trying to feel for a pulse through his silk gloves, and he waited a laboriously long time. Numbness needled its way into her thumb, tingles spiking across her palm, before he finally lifted his fingers. Blood flooded back into her hand. The client clicked his tongue in annoyance.
Look what you've made me do. I've killed a girl for nothing.
She's still breathing, I assure you, the woman protested. Nika remembered to hold her breath.
Enough of this, the client snapped.
She heard the clatter of a knife.
The next time you call me, make sure it's not over a ghost story.
There was silence, and then footsteps, growing farther away from the cage. In the distance, the door opened and banged shut. Someone slammed a fist against her cage, rattling the bars.
You insufferable witch, the butcher growled, the malice in her voice lethal.
Wake up! I know you're alive! Nika opened an eye, then another. Only the butchers remained, and she rolled herself onto her back, too spent to sit up. Blood stained the floor, caking her hair to her face and wetting her clothes. She was alive, though she must have looked like a corpse.
You won't be able to pull that trick every time, the woman spat.
What trick? Nika rasped. Your client wanted a demonstration. I thought I put on quite a show. She licked blood from her teeth, her stomach flipping with hunger at its sweetness. If you don't mind, I need food.
You think you can make demands here?
Healing expends a tremendous amount of calories. If you don't feed me, my death won't be an act.
No more tricks, blood carver.
Nika drew herself up against the back of her cage, feeling the mesh dig into her skin. Everything felt a little raw, the skin learning to feel again after she'd shunted away its blood. Let's make a deal. If you can find a buyer who doesn't plan on killing or eating me, I'll be cooperative. The woman gathered her things to leave, hesitating with an answer. Nika wondered if she was actually considering it,
making bargains with her merchandise. But she turned to leave with her lackeys and gave a huff as a final parting gift. "We'll sell you to the highest bidder. What they plan to do with you is not my concern."
3. After all that, they did bring her food, if it could be called that. She figured it must have been the same stuff they gave to the animals, leftover meats, bones, and vegetables all ground into a slop. Nika turned off her taste receptors to get it down, but couldn't deny the nutrition it provided. Taking her time to avoid scarring, she expended the new energy to tend to her wounds. If anything, perhaps there was a bright side to this. It had been a long, long time since she'd had reliable meals. While she wanted to resent the client and his wife who had landed her here, she couldn't. Nika had done this to herself, really. Once upon a time, her gift was meant for selfless purposes. It was intended to be shared, celebrated, known. But she didn't have that luxury anymore. Now, it was used solely for survival. They kept her in the dark most of the day, turning on the lights only when they brought in new clients or wares. She wondered where this place might have been. Probably near the rat burrow, where no one cared if a few girls went missing, where the constabulary relaxed their supervision. The city couldn't eliminate the Butcher's Row even if it tried. It was not a place, but a concept, a vast economy of purloined goods and poached animals. It was a stain on Thumas, where people worshipped the scientific method over the gods of old, and ignorance followed faithfully in the shadow of achievement. They claimed that innovation conquered all, but Nika knew best that fear and superstition were immortal. Maybe the butchers did heed her bargain, because the next bidder was an elusive and shadowed man who wanted her not for food, but as an assassin. He looked to be one of those underworld types, with gold rings marking his fingers and dragon tattoos lacing his skin where it wasn't covered. He made an ostentatious display of not being afraid of her, reaching into her cell with bare fingers and lingering near the bars with open robe. Nika considered maiming him for it, but that would land her nowhere. Besides, all things considered, his was not the worst gig. He placed his bid. 500,000 chem. More money than Nika had considered in her entire life. Enough to buy a house outside the dog burrow and retire comfortably. The next bidder went even higher. It was an aristocratic lady with a dead husband. Still in mourning silks, she must have been desperate, because even the butcher seemed to know a blood carver couldn't bring back the dead, though they conveniently forgot to inform their client. Selfishly, Nika hoped this client would win her auction anyway, because she looked too frail to put up a fight if Nika wanted to run away. She bid 700,000. Throughout the next couple days, bidders came and went through the warehouse doors. Whenever Nika hoped for a high bid,